You're up, we're up. It's the perfect match. Now it's on you to make the right decision while you're scrolling in bed. Go big or go home at 7-Eleven with their boneless wings tossed in hot honey sauce with a spot-on sweet and spicy combo. It's available at 7-Eleven and just $5 with 7 rewards. Visit your local Columbus 7-Eleven and satisfy that craving today. Valid through 6/23/26. While supplies last, participating stores see app for full terms.
This is the Friends of History Debating Society. I'm John Batchelor. Jeff Bliss is Pacific Watch. We begin with labor on the West Coast and the East Coast. Writers strike. What does this mean to the business? We go to the New York Times reporting. The 2007 writers strike couldn't have come at a worse time for the screenwriter Zach Stentz. After 3 years of being unemployed, Mr. Stentz was happily ensconced in a new job as an executive story editor on Fox's Terminator. He was working with a high-caliber group of writers on a show he described as dark, thoughtful, and weird. Before the strike, the staff had successfully completed 9 episodes of the show, which tracked the aftermath of events depicted in the blockbuster film Terminator 2. When the hour-long drama debuted in January 2008, it earned solid ratings and a loyal fan base. Still, Mr. Stentz, who has gone on to write for series like J.J. Abrams' Fringe and Greg Berlanti's The Flash, believes the 100-day strike ultimately sealed the show's fate, a truncated 2-season, 31-episode arc. He says today, "It was heartbreaking because we felt like we were doing something really special." He recalled the show's budgets being slashed during the second season after the extended break caused ratings to plunge. The conventional wisdom on the show is that it was ahead of its time and it would come out in the it should have come out in the 2010s. It probably would have been a much bigger success. However, the lesson here is that the writer's strike truncated his success in 2008. And here we are again, one of many television shows and movies whose fate was altered by the last writer's strike, and now a new writer's strike. Jeff, a very good evening to you. The writers are well paid, and they're extremely well organized. I remember the writer's strike of 2008. Eventually, they didn't have any new programming. They were running repeats. What is your measure of this writer's strike? Is it going to go as long as it did in 2008? And there's much talk of ChatGPT or AI. Is that the issue that the gossip makes it? Good evening to you.
Good evening, John. This does have a potential to be a longer strike and a more devastating strike, not just to the Hollywood filmmaking and TV making communities or industries, but also much of Southern California, which is, you know, often deeply tied to the industry. So it's not just the stars and the directors and all the people in front behind the scenes. It's also a lot of people that do things like supply catering and fuel to, you know, buses that move people places and lumber supply for sets that are made. I mean, it's just, you know, we have this feeling sometimes about Hollywood being very surface, very, you know, very insubstantial, but it's a major business in Southern California. And that's why, you know, Southern California makes such a big deal about it, certainly in the LA Hollywood area. It's billions of dollars of revenue and income and such every month. And now it's coming to a screeching stop. And so just for some background on it, you have two labor unions representing the 11,000 film, TV, news, radio, and online writers. And, you know, they went on strike. Of course, they want higher pay. That's kind of a given. They want a more stable pay structure. There is kind of a feeling that in the world of streaming, that the companies like Netflix and such are making huge, huge amounts of money while the writers aren't really making much more at all, if any. And then on top of that, they have these ideas or they want these provisions put in about artificial intelligence. So you're right. It is something that's important to them. It's something that they see already just in everyday life making a difference. And they're afraid that eventually studios could just turn over a lot of script writing to AI. You know, maybe they have a few editors or a few writers to clean things up. But they're calling it an existential moment for what they do, what writers do. And the the studio heads, the alliance of producers are saying, well, you know, this is the way that, that business goes. This is a way that, you know, things change with modernity and technology and all that. So they're not really giving much of attention to that with the writers. The writers are saying no AI for any scripts. We're not going to allow it for this and that. And the production companies are thinking, well, you know, we do need to cut corners sometimes. We do need to make more profits, or we do need to make stockholders happy. So we're going to use it where we want. And that's where a lot of the headbutting is coming in.
100 days in 2007, 2008. Have you heard that number matched? Are they going to exceed that? That would take us through the summer.
There is some thinking that this could go on for many months. Nobody is saying anything like a year, but I've heard several people say easily 4 to 6 months, because the producers don't want to move on this. And the writers feel like if they do, they're cutting their own throats. It's about more than just, hey, we need a 15% increase, or we need to be keeping up with inflation. They're actually thinking that if they don't get these provisions put into their contract with producers, they stand a good chance of losing their livelihoods.
We move from Hollywood, not very far, to Walt Disney. This is an analysis of where Disney is right now. Disney's theme parks, meanwhile, will likely post weaker growth numbers in the second half of the year compared with last year's performance tied to the 50th anniversary. This is a remark from Financial Chief Christine McCarthy. The comparison, coupled with inflationary cost pressures, including from a new union agreement, is expected to drive a modest adverse impact to domestic parks and experiences operating margins in the third quarter compared to the prior year. Disney stock was already sagging because of the report. It disappointed Wall Street. Now the projection is that the third quarter, maybe the second half of the year, will be poor as well. But Jeff, you've reported that the attendance at Disneyland remains strong, correct?
It does. From all accounts, both anecdotal and statistical, it seems that they're going great guns. Like, you know, some of their top years, they're at capacity many days. A big complaint among many of the guests are that there are too many people there, that it's oversold. So it doesn't seem to be a problem there. Now, I can't speak for some of the company's overseas operations like Paris, Disneyland, Tokyo, or Shanghai. But certainly from what I'm hearing and reading in Disney World in Florida and Disneyland in California, they're doing quite well.
So we'll say that we've got to watch the Disney as a measure of the economy, because this is very much right to customer. There's nothing in between. If the customer is feeling good, Disney will do well. And this long-awaited recession has flummoxed everybody as to how to respond, how to get ready. But right now, the report on Disneyland, that's not Disney World in Florida, Disneyland. There is that other aspect of the politics of this, and I can't solve it, Jeff. It just seems that, in general, it's never good for any business that counts on the American public to get involved in political debate.
That's right. Things are so polarized, and when you do that, you're going to drive a big part of your business away. You know, that so many big corporations donate money and help to candidates on both sides of an issue, or candidates, you know, two different candidates in a race, because they want to stay in good graces of both of them and with the people that follow them. But when you stake out a claim that this is where we're going to be, this is how we feel, then you have to get ready to accept the consequences. And in this case, I do think Disney has alienated quite a few people over the past few years with their political and cultural stance. So, you know, you see Disney bringing in people to work on the brand. You see some attention from CEO Iger and others to be more of what Disney's been known for rather than trying to be something progressive. And so they're trying to fix it, but it's, you know, once you damage your brand, it's very tough to come back.
Now for something completely different. Seattle. Jeff has long had an explanation every time I ask him, why is this happening in Seattle? Why is this happening in Portland? He'll say to me, because Seattle. That has to be the answer. This is from a report about Seattle, South Seattle. Some South Seattle residents are claiming a significant mail fail is occurring as the U.S. Postal Service has halted mail delivery due to a rise in recent vandalism and theft. What's going on, Jeff? Is this the homeless, or is this some kind of gang?
It appears that this is connected with the large population of homeless that live in that region, with the problems that come about with it from, you know, substance abuse and burglaries, thefts. So, check washing, check, you know, forgeries and other types of things related to that have always been a pretty easy thing for criminals to get away with. And that's what it appears they're trying to do now. So oftentimes I've talked with postal worker people before, and they've said, you know, they'll just take a whole mailbox out, or they'll take a whole apartment building's mailboxes out, or even break into mail trucks. And the idea is, we're going to take all the mail and we'll sort through it for the checks that we're going to forge or wash, which means alter for their use. And then, you know, might be three or four checks, but it'll net them a pretty good payday. And oftentimes they're not caught.
Now for something completely different from Seattle. Happy Mother's Day, Jeff. How was let's remind people why California. How was the weather at the beach, Jeff?
Oh, happy Mother's Day to your family and everybody else out there. It was beautiful. We were down at the beach. A lot of people down there. It felt like, you know, really the beginning of summer instead of Memorial Day when it usually is. The beach was very busy. The parking lots were packed, and the water was nice. There were a lot of people out surfing and wading in the water, and it was a lot of sunshine today. And up and down the strand of beach where we go in Laguna Beach near our house are quite a few restaurants and hotels, and those were filled with brunches. And, you know, the economy is going very well for the people that run those businesses.
Jeff Bliss is Pacific Watch. This is the Friends of History Debating Society. I'm John Batchelor.
Moro Casino. America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Lots of places can expose you to identity theft. That's why LifeLock monitors hundreds of millions of data points a second for threats to your identity, which is way more than anyone can do on their own. If we find anything suspicious, like new loans or changes to your financial accounts, we alert you right away, all through text, phone, email, or the LifeLock app. Save up to 30% your first year. Visit LifeLock.com/iHeart. Terms apply.